Okay, first business is approval of minutes. First set of the minutes is the 21st of June.
I move we approve those minutes, subject to a couple of changes.
Do you want those changes in here?
I'll make them in the motion. Yep, the first change is in the approval of prior minutes of May 17th. I made the motion, and Shane, I don't think you were at the meeting at the time. Ken, I think you were the one who seconded the motion on the approval of the May 17th minutes.
Yep.
You were, I don't think Shane was in at the time. You were the one that seconded the motion.
Correct.
On page 4, section Roman numeral 5B, Kathleen Herbert's appointed to the library until November 21, I believe, not first.
Were we talking about this?
I'm sorry, on page,
I'm missing it.
Okay, on June 21, page 4, section Roman numeral V,
I see it.
B. Instead of November 1, as it said, should say
21st.
And I'm going to go to the end and then come back for a second. On page 7, paragraph C, capital C, 5th line, I think it says, grant covering paint lines on the road should be painting lines on the road. And then the last line on paragraph capital C, it says he state, it should say he stated that is fraud. And then going back a page to page 6, we were talking about the Eversource outreach program. Just should be a section in there, not referring to any subparagraph, but we probably should add a subparagraph, maybe call it E. That I stated that we needed to the letter needed to be revised to change the dates that were originally in the letter. I think if we recall, the letter said June, and at that point, June was virtually over. So, and then finally, in paragraph D of that same section, which is Roman numeral 9, second line, it says, or give, it should be given to residents, just to correct the English. Those are the changes that I have.
Second.
Further discussion, I have on that section 3 under selection comments. Number 1, you had asked for a list of roads that need repair, not repair. And under 4, citizen comments, D, and I'll point it out to you, it just shows D. Okay, under D,
yep.
That was where it says, yeah, right afterwards says everything before meetings.
Before meetings, yep.
Yeah, right there.
Yep.
Through there.
Yep. Okay, we're, okay.
Yeah.
Delete that sentence.
Yeah, so the sentence.
Sorry, I can't follow.
No, I know okay. You know. Steve, you just want
okay,
to show it.
Well, I should read it out. He asked if the third selectman is being kept appraised of everything before the meetings. He
delete the next sentence.
Delete the sentence after that. And then it would continue. Complaint was made in January.
And in that,
You want the entire sentence after what you just said deleted.
Correct.
That's what you're saying.
And to amend that to a complaint filed with first selectman against fire department member alleged ethic violations. on with the gist of the rest of the stuff from there on. Those were the two changes that I have. Do you have any?
Can I catch them, the grammatical errors that I have?
Okay, we have a motion, seconded, all in favor?
Aye.
Next, we have the June 30th special meeting.
Motion to approve the minutes of June 30, 2016, special meeting of the Board of Selectmen, subject to two changes, I think. First one is that on paragraph 3, subparagraph D, it says July 5, no, I believe, which is the date of the deadline for the applications for the highway maintainer. I believe that is the correct date, but I think at the time we said July 12th, but
correct.
Just to correct the minutes, we said July 12th at the time, but correct as stated, but incorrectly minuted.
And what was the other one?
The other one is that we also did discuss agenda items for this meeting at the time, and we just could add a paragraph saying agenda items were discussed or something like that. If that's acceptable. We discussed the agenda items for this meeting. So.
Well, we did. We did ask.
What we were going to be adding for this meeting. That's all.
Well, I did ask you after for whatever agenda items
right,
that you
exactly.
had.
Yeah.
But the minutes have to reflect what is on the agenda.
Right.
And the only two things on the agenda was the tax warrant and the
if you wanted
vacant
to
positions.
Okay. If you
wish to, that's fine. Because I had asked you even previous if
okay.
you had anything to let us know. If you had any agenda items.
And all right.
You
fine.
Gave those to Marie after, so we could add those.
Okay. Fair
so,
enough.
Changing that date, seconded the motion.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Correspondence. I'm not sure if you got it in the same order that I've got. Correspondence, the governor did release $4.3 million to regional municipalities to help cut costs through regionalization of services. NECOG was awarded the second phase of the pre-hospital emergency care study for $100,000. Also, a regional household hazardous waste facility of $708,500. This grant will be provided to construct and operate for the first year a hazardous waste collection center for the 16 members of the COG.
Okay.
So that'll eliminate us from doing one every other year. And also, they did get a grant for $608,000 to expansion and code compliance for their animal services.
Excellent.
So they're going to be revamped. We thought there was one more thing that was on there that we didn't get money on, and that was a pothole patcher. We had tried to get one of those pothole patches during the winter that actually puts the warm stuff down, but that was not funded. So that was great news to hear on that. I did get a letter from Yale Data Driven Environmental Solutions Group with our overall score on municipal solar power. So those facts are there for you to review. There is a Chamber of Commerce after our business meeting on July 13th at Church Street and Providence Street. Anyway, if you're interested in going, it'll be available. I'll have it for you. It's a business after hours, and there's a $7 cost to attend it. I wonder if Church and Providence Street. I'm not sure exactly which business that is. So, they're always putting something on. We did get, and I'll read it, it was addressed to me, dear selectmen. I'm writing to thank you for your generous $1,000 Tom Thompson Scholarship. I'm very happy and appreciative to learn that I was selected as a recipient of your scholarship. I will be majoring in mechanical engineering at UConn in the fall. I plan to pursue a career focusing on either the aerospace and defense industry or possibly the auto industry in the future. Thanks to you, I'm one step closer to that goal by awarding me the Tom Thompson Scholarship. You have lightened my financial burden, which allows me to focus more on the most important aspect of school learning. Your generosity has inspired me to help others and give back to the community. I hope one day I will be able to help students achieve their goals just as you helped me. Signed, Jared Annis. So that was a, there was a group of students that were selected and sent down, and recommendations were given by finance director and myself, and a pick was made from the by the school based on the names that we had submitted. And FYI, as you are aware, there was a FOI complaint filed against the PNC board. So
which board?
PNC.
Okay. This is on, we really can't hear you.
Sorry.
Is there any status on that, or is that just?
There's a hearing. There's a hearing date scheduled for July 14th. This was scheduled prior to any mediation or anything to resolve it.
Thank you.
All right. That's what I do have in correspondence. Do either one of you have any?
Not official correspondence, no.
All right, moving on to selectmen's comments. I got a bunch of things here. I want to thank the fire department for hosting our town meeting. Selectmen's meeting here, it's always good to get out and about. It's also nice to see the facilities that our fire departments are using and get out into the neighborhood. So thank you very much for that. Okay, if anybody, just to let you know, after much conversation, we do have the flagpole illuminated officially at the town hall. The electrician did get around to putting the light up finally. It does its job, which works out very well. So that's been taken care of. Request has been made to the state for the speed limit radar trailer. Whether or not, I'm still waiting word on that from them, because they will not put up temporary speed limit signs. It has to be something of that nature. And so as soon as I hear something, I will let you know. State has posted some new signage on Buckley Hill Road for the Riverside intersection and the Route 200 intersection at both ends. It is a area that we do have quite a bit of accidents from time to time, and usually they're pretty serious when we do have them at that because of the curves and so forth. So the state has installed some new signage, more of it that meets the code for reflections and so forth. And I also requested a safety study on the intersection at both ends, and the they will let me know when they do complete that as to what, if any, recommendations can be made there. Also, I did get a hold of the school to turn off the school crossing warning lights for summer vacation. The more they flash, the more people get used to them being on, and it goes into the back of their minds and nobody notices them. So
still on.
They're still on. There was supposed, second time I reminded them today, it was supposed to, Mr. Birch was supposed to get them turned off. The highway department started today laying the crushed stone on the airline trail starting in Mechanicsville and heading north. They have a limited staff due to the vacation weeks, and they started laying this out. So I forget how many miles they got, Al? Three? It's a substantial length of trailing that they have to do, so they've started on that as well. Update on the library, HVAC. The Eversource contractor clear result was back in there on Friday. Since we had the tie-in bond study that showed with the immediate repairs that were needed in the first year, which were several heat pumps and the AC unit and some controls, they took that information and are applying it with an update on cost and what the energy savings may be. I met with them on Friday, so that will be finishing up, because there's more of a energy savings by replacing the heat pumps as well in order to get energy credits. So we'll keep you apprised of that. I was notified by Connecticut Water. There is a property issue with our back parking lot up in the back of the building. Come to find out, we own the town hall. We own roughly about 15 feet off the building, and they own the rest. I find it interesting because they had renovated that in 1986 and put all kinds of drainage and everything up there on the hill, paved it, etc. That there was nothing in place for a easement or a letter of usage, you know, by
memorandum of understanding or anything.
Yeah. So Connecticut Water back parking lot. Again, it's a liability issue. Connecticut Water will work with us to give us that property, to take that liability away from them. And what we have to do is provide the survey and the deed cost to assume that. So I'm looking into that expense and whether or not we
can
have
to tax them.
And whether or not I've got to go in front of, we have to go in front of P&Z for land acquisition. So I've got to. I got to look at that process as well. So that's to let you know what we have going there. The sewer project is still being studied for completion options.
Marionette, you mean?
Yes, the sewer project. The phosphorus upgrade is underway. They're getting materials in so that way they can make that installation at the appropriate time, because they had to build a building that houses the whatever controls or whatever part of it. So they're moving along. The school oil spill remediation recovery is moving forward with the town attorneys. And Leo will be putting together a roads need list that he will be working on to present to the board in the future.
Well, that'll be as we talked about this at the last meeting.
Correct.
That's going to be a sort of a plan as to what we'll do in the near future and the longer term plan.
What he has planned to do and what he foresees long term.
Okay.
And try to get a listing of priorities and stuff.
Okay.
But as we know, that changes depending on what
changes, but yeah,
so
some
forth.
Sort of a plan. Okay, thank you.
Okay. And that's what I have. How about you, Steve?
I really don't have much. Just on a kind of a personal note, kind of bad week for my my college, my school. A bad month, I should say, for June. I don't know if you remember the news, but as part of our training, we would spend a summer going out to Army units and participating with the various Army units. And my particular summer, I went to Fort Hood and spent time in a tank unit, actually, there. And they still do that. And I don't know if you remember the news in the beginning of June that there was some soldiers drowned. I think 9 soldiers drowned at Fort Hood.
Oh, in the flood.
In the flood, yeah, flooding, and actually, one of them was a West Point cadet. So, it's kind of bad news for my school, I learned that. And then, just yesterday, another cadet, actually, there's a connection between, let's call it class affiliation. I graduated in '69, and so we have a connection with the class of '19, 2019, that's a 50-year affiliation. So we have some connections with that class. And a member of that class drowned about a week ago in Long Island. He was trying to help someone who was in trouble, and swallowed a bunch of water, stayed alive for about 2 days, but ended up succumbing to his injuries. He was born on the 4th of July, and he was buried yesterday on the 4th of July. He was awarded the Soldier's Medal, which is an honor given to acts of courage, not in combat, but in civilian life. So it's another sort of a sad note, just to pass on.
Sorry.
That was what, the West Virginia floods, wasn't it, that they had lost somebody? Was it Texas?
Well, Texas, Fort Hood's in Texas, but this was in Long Island Sound, which was happening last week. We had two.
I know we had two bad floods at the.
This was a swimming accident, and then the other one was a military exercise, his Jeep got washed away, so.
The only thing that I had, thanks for seeing if we could get the speed limit trailer. On Riverside Drive, I noticed that it's 40 miles per hour the whole time. I thought at one point it was 25, and if not, I'm wondering, when does the state come and reassess certain areas, or is that at the request of the town?
I can, well, I'll reach out to, I don't know the answer. I'll reach out to Rick Chapman out of District 2, which is out of Norwich, because he's the one that I met with about signage and so forth. And he sent me to Hartford for, I should say, Newington, for the, you know, the construction and the engineering up there. I'll find out if this is something that he handles and they do a study. And that may be a reason why they may want to put the trail out as well. But the whole Riverside Drive corridor, even up through here, I've had a complaint from a citizen, especially going from the intersection, the short quarter mile intersection up to the blue line, that they say is getting out of hand a little bit. You know, I have, since our last meeting, I did send the state police a request of troubled roads that we're getting multiple complaints about speed on, and asked them to, when they're out, to, you know, set up a patrol when they can, you know, in their schedule, so.
And then a few years back, we had a resident, I believe, request that a street light be placed at the railroad track entering Riverside Park. But I don't know, like, just before St. Joe's on the right there, where the concerts are. In the evening, it's hard to tell sometimes if there are pedestrians walking there in the evening. It's usually young kids. And I can't remember if a call was ever made to see what would be necessary. I know that St. Joseph's was looking at installing their own street light and added one, but this would be further, more towards near our town hall.
If it comes by our approval to put a street light in, and a commitment of, I think it's 7 or 10 years that we, whatever it is, that we have to keep it on once they install. And I can't remember if it's $14 or $21 a month that we get charged per light, you know, to maintain, to keep them on, and then they do everything. But it's up to the board to put it, and of course, it's important whether or not there's a pole there in order for them to tap off. You know, which would be the main criteria. What I can do is I can talk to, I'll look, then talk to our.
Where the road intersects with the railroad tracks by the park, talking about.
Yeah.
You
know,
that's,
yeah.
That would be.
Okay. And I can find out from Sean Johnston any particulars that we may need.
Sure.
But I know any of the street lights, it's a vote of the board whether to put it on because it's expense, we take care of that.
Right.
And the other question is whether or not there's a poll to support it so they can get the power. So I can look into that. Okay, moving. You're both all set?
Yeah.
Okay, citizens' comments. Mr. Land.
Calendar 33 Randall. Number one was about the lights still blinking. We leave that on all summer, people aren't going to know when school starts and then we'll be paying the price probably. And I was just wondering about what's happening at the crosswalk at Dunkin' Donuts, Dollar General, and you hear the scares. You said you were talking, you were standing here.
I've been trying to reach Mr. Chapman for the past 2 weeks and I have not been able to reach him on that.
That's pretty important, I think. And last meeting, I asked you about the school bond, what's left and how much we're paying per year that you.
I'm sorry, I did not.
You probably want me to wait to talk about the road bill until that comes up. Your turn, buddy.
Yeah, I think this is something we're going to be involving the town. Agreed. We'll be involving the town in this resolution.
Okay, why not, sure.
Renee King, Gold Davis Road. When is the borough bill conversation going to take place tonight on the agenda?
10th item.
Item 10?
Number 10.
Oh, okay.
If you'd like a copy, there's one.
Hi, my name is Jason Okowski from Burrville. I wanted to come and make some comments ahead of the discussion tonight that you guys were going to have. Now would be the most appropriate time, or should I defer them?
Unless you wish to stay throughout the meeting.
Well, we can move it up because he's a resident of the town.
I mean, that's up to the board if you want to do that, move it ahead.
Move it up, that's fine.
Move it up to 4A.
Is that a motion?
And I'll make a motion that we move the energy plan up to 4A.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Can you spell your last name for me?
Absolutely. O-L-K-O-W-S-K-I.
Any other citizens' comments? Okay. Hearing none. 4A, energy plan. That was easy. The energy plant. We did discuss the resolution that we did receive from Mr. Roselli. And I did ask if you've had a chance to take a look at it, to give me some input on it. So that would be good to get. Getting back to what we had discussed before with this, I think it's appropriate then to go to a town meeting with this and get the input from the town in approving this resolution with our concerns about the plant. In doing so, it's going to require a town meeting at which we do have some leftover business from last October for the inland wetlands conservation ordinances that are in conflict with the state law, that we need to make those amendments. And the other one that was out there was the constables and the use by our emergency management director when it's appropriate at the time of need, that he can use them, activate them, and give give them direction accordingly. Okay? There was some issues with the language. I did ask Steve, I did remind him tonight for that original language before it got all mixed up and everything. So if, you know, by having a town meeting, I think it's, we can get things that need to be done at them instead of just having it as one shot just for the local resolution and get a couple of these smaller things out of, you know, that need to be taken care of. So with that being the 5th of July, I would anticipate by the time we get the ordinance taken care of, you know, at least the draft that we can all agree on, and it'll take at least the next meeting to do that, and then quick review by town attorney for proper language. The other two had already been reviewed by the town attorney for the inland wetlands and the conservation. So we need to get that and just finish the couple of words here or there that we may want to fit into the thing. So I would be looking roughly beginning of August, maybe about right to get a town meeting up. It would seem about appropriate. We're looking at a month, but I think we can do it in that amount of time.
Sounds reasonable.
Okay. So now I will entertain any comments. That's where the board stands at this point. Renee?
Renee King, Lowell Davis Road, Thompson. What I'd like to do tonight is to present a map of the power plants that are located in the Last Green Valley and the Blackstone River Valley, and to show the residents how Thompson and this whole area will be significantly impacted by Boroughville and Killingland. Can I?
So I've just started this actually, and I want to work, you know, present it, finish it in the next few days for the Killingly Not Another Power Plant meeting. Can everybody see this? So anyways, what these circles demonstrate is the significant impact radius of each power plant, and each radius is 12 miles from the center. Right. And before we talk about the power plants, I first want to just point out the different dots on here. The black dots in the circles obviously are the different power plants, and all these power plants are on the Algonquin gas line, except for the Lisbon power plant, which is a trash burning power plant. And we're going to talk about each power plant and the megawatts that each power plant produces, all right? But before we talk about that specifically, what I did, and I've only been had time to do this area for this meeting, but eventually I plan to mark these areas as well. All the red dots show all the schools within Thompson, Putnam, and Killingly. And then I was able to, I also showed one of the schools in Gloucester and three of the schools in Boroughville. I haven't had time to add this corner, and I hope to do that in the next few days. This green dot, there we go. Anyways, the green dot is under this, but there's right where my pen is right here would be Day Kimball Hospital. And I thought that was important to know. And if anybody in the audience has information about some of the other surrounding hospitals that we can include on this, I think that would be important. All right, so anyways, now what I'd like to do is talk about the different power plants that are impacting the Blackstone River Valley, which is in through the Massachusetts, Rhode Island area. And then the Last Green Valley, which is the Massachusetts, Connecticut area. All right. And we're going to start with the outliers. There's a power plant in Charlton that is gas-run and produces 360 megawatts of power. There is a power plant in, this is Charlton, Massachusetts. There's a power plant in Lisbon, Connecticut, which, as I said, runs on trash, and that produces 15 megawatts of power, all right? So I want you to keep those numbers in mind because that will give you some reference as far as how big some of these other power plants are and the two that they want to build are very big power plants. So before we get to our immediate area, I want to point out this area. This is in Massachusetts. It includes the towns of Medway, Milford, and Bellingham. And just within those three towns, and there might be one other town in there. Anyways, just those three towns, they have one, two, three, four power plants on the Algonquin gas line already. They've been operational since the early 1900s. They've been operational since like 1990, 1991, 1992. All right. And those power plants, I just represented one circle back here because otherwise it gets a little too murky to read. Theoretically, we could have four more circles right here. So the gas power that's being produced in this part of the Blackstone River Valley is one power plant's producing 360 megawatts, another power plant's producing 578 megawatts, another power plant's producing 178 megawatts, and then another power plant is producing 123 megawatts. One of those power plants is actually not gas. It's actually, I believe, the Medway power plant is an oil burning power plant, which produces far more emissions than pollution. So anyways, keep that in mind as we move down here. Now the next power plant we have in the Blackstone River Valley is right here. Okay, and this is the circle. This is Blackstone. I believe it's called Blackstone Energy Center, but I'm not sure. They produce 578 megawatts, and that is a fracked gas power plant. All right. Then we have this circle here, and this represents Ocean State Power and Ocean State Power One. Those are two individual power plants on the same site in Burrillville, Rhode Island. And Ocean State Power produces 254 megawatts. Ocean State Power One produces 254 megawatts as well. So that's a total of 550 megawatts, plus or minus. So that's this circle here. The next power plant in our backyard is Lake Road Generating in Dayville, Connecticut. That is a gas power plant. And I'm not sure if these are all running on fracked gas. I assume so because they're all feeding off the Algonquin gas line. But either way, they're all gas power plants. This is the 12-mile radius for Lake Road Generating. It produces 840 megawatts of power. All right, so this is what our area is dealing with. And if you actually measure from where Killingly Lake Road Power Plant is to where Blackstone is, that's 22 miles, the way the crow flies. If you measure from Killingly to the furthest point in Medway, that's 30 miles. So right now, within a 30-mile tract of land, not including the outliers, we're looking at 8 power plants. We already have 8 power plants in a 30-mile tract of land.
There's one in Dover.
Yeah.
Oh.
That runs on the trash.
Okay.
Right off of Route 20.
Could you direct the comments up here?
Sorry about that.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. I'll add it.
Okay.
And after this, and after this is done, I mean, feel free to have a conversation, you know, with Renee after, if you have an unanswered question after we move, you know, move on.
So what I want to do now is add the Killingley Power Plant that's proposed, and it's called the Killingley Energy Center, and that's 550 megawatts. And that is right here. All right. And you can see that if Killingley does approve this second power plant, you can, and these two power plants are within less than a 1 mile, I believe, distance of each other, and you can see that within a 3/4 mile distance to a 3 mile distance, there are many schools in this area. All right, so I think we need to really keep that in mind. And Day Kimball Hospital is less than 3 miles from these power plants as well. All right, and then we're going to add, just to make it more interesting, the 1,000 megawatts power plant going up in Burrowville. And not only is it one of the largest producing power plants in New England, doubling the output of all these power plants, all right. It also has the, you know, if they draw water from the MTBE, contaminated well in Pascog, we're gonna be dealing with the airborne and water effects of the MTBEs. And that one goes right here. All right, so where does Thompson sit in all of this? Unfortunately, this is Thompson. And when you count the circles, I believe I counted 5 circles and maybe more. I'd have to recount them. let's see, we've got the Ocean State Power Plant that affects Thompson. This is Thompson, right? We've got the Burrowville Power Plant that potentially could affect Thompson. We've got the 2 Dayville Power Plants that affect Thompson. And we have the outer aspect of Charlton that affects Thompson. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 power plants that are going to all be impacting Thompson, and we're within the significant impact radius of 5 to 12 miles. So I think as a town, we really need to keep this in perspective and think logically about how this is going to affect us as a town, our health, our water, our air, our land. The other point I wanted to make was that all these power plants are major, major players and major producers of electricity. Lisbon is only producing 15 megawatts. And when you look at, like, many of the hospitals have power plants, many of the colleges have their own little power plants, but they're only producing 2 or 3 megawatts, all right? So this gives you some indication, you know, we've all driven by the power plant on 395 in Lisbon, and you see this huge stack, and they're producing 15 megawatts. So when you compare 15 to 550 to 840 to 1,000 to 254, 254, and all these others, we're talking about a major, you know, we're going to be within, you know, 12 miles of 3 huge power plants feeding New England. And this power isn't necessarily coming to Thompson or to Connecticut. It's going into the grid, into the New England grid, and feeding other states, Rhode Island being one of the primary players. Because right now, all the power that's being produced in Killingley, to my knowledge, is being sent to Rhode Island until 2017. So again, I think we have to keep that in mind. And I, you know, my concern is, you know, I know nobody wants a power plant in their backyard, but I feel like it's our responsibility to protect the Green Valley and the Blackstone River Valley, not only for us and our families, but for all of New England, because, you know, all these woods do clean the air, and they absorb carbon, carbon monoxide or dioxide?
Dioxide.
Thank you. So again, I think we have to keep that in mind, and we need to educate ourselves. I don't think we should be, you know, act in a highly emotional or a state of alarm, but we need to educate ourselves and talk to people and then, you know, work together as towns collectively. So the last thing I wanted to end with was I just wanted to read what towns are impacted by Killingly and then what towns are impacted by Burrillville. So the towns in Rhode Island, Connecticut, and Massachusetts which will be impacted by the new Killingly Energy Center and are already impacted by Lake Road are Killingly, Putnam, Thompson, Woodstock, Pomfret, Brooklyn, Eastford, Canterbury, Hampton, Chaplin. Those are the towns in Connecticut that are currently being impacted by our power plants in Connecticut. Also, Foster, Rhode Island, Gloucester, and Burrillville. So all these towns sit within the 5 to 12 mile significant impact radius, all right? Now the towns that are impacted by the Clear River Energy Center, which is Burrillville, and that's the 1,000 megawatt they want to put up, are Burrillville, Gloucester, Foster, North Smithfield, Smithfield, Woonsocket. Those are the Rhode Island towns. The Connecticut towns are Thompson, Putnam, Killingly, Woodstock. And then the Massachusetts towns are Webster, Dudley, Douglas, Sutton, Whitensville, Uxbridge, Blackstone, and Mendham. All right. And that doesn't even include the towns in this area, all right, that we were talking about, Medway, Milford, because there are towns, you know, as far as Framingham that are impacted by these power plants. The other thing I wanted to point out that if these two power plants, Killingly and Burrillville, are both approved, there are going to be towns significantly impacted by the overflow, whatever you want to call it, of both power plants, both new power plants. And those towns in Rhode Island would be Burrillville, Gloucester, and Foster. And then the towns in Connecticut that would be impacted by both power plants would be Thompson, Putnam, Killingly, and Woodstock. All right. And as I mentioned before, according to this map, Killingly is impacted by at least 5 power plants already. So that has the potential to grow. So I think we need to keep this all in our minds. And the one last thing, last point I'd like to make, just for the record, is that I would hope that our state reps, both not only in Connecticut, but also Massachusetts and Rhode Island, can all, you know, we're stuck because we're in a tri-state area. And I don't know if all the states are communicating with each other. But these two valleys cross 3 states. We all breathe the same water breathe the same air and drink the same water. And so I would hope that our state officials are going to communicate about the tri-state area. And I really think that a environmental impact study needs to be done. Because to my knowledge, they're not doing one for Burrillville. And to my knowledge, they're not doing one for Killingly. And I think that we really need to think about our tri-state area and really preserving and protecting what we have, not only for us, but for all of New England. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Do you want me to leave this here so people can look at it?
Okay. For the record, you are?
For the record, I am Jason Okowski from Burrillville, Rhode Island. It's okay, I've got some materials to pass out to you guys tonight.
Are you a resident?
I'm a resident of Burrillville.
Okay.
So let me walk you quickly through what I delivered to you there. There's four main exhibits. The first one is a fact sheet that the residents of Burrillville have put together about the effects of the power plant. The second one is a map that highlights some of the areas in a 5-mile radius of impact. The third exhibit is a letter from the Conservation Law Foundation that addresses the need for the power plant and why there in fact is not a need for the power plant, and why both the need and the ratepayer savings and the tax impact have all been significantly overblown. And then the last exhibit in there is a letter that the Town Council of Burrillville back in August of 2000 sent the Energy Facility Siting Board regarding a proposed power plant in Smithfield, Rhode Island. It's an example of some very strong language that the Town Council of Burrillville put forth in 2000, and essentially we're asking for help from our neighbors of a similar sort. So with that in mind, let me start some of my prepared comments here. As I mentioned, my name is Jason Okowski. I am a resident of Burrillville, and I wanted to thank you. I want to thank the board for their time and the opportunity to address you this evening on this really very important topic. First, I wanted to tell you why I, a citizen of Burrillville, drove all the way across the border to come and talk to our friends in Connecticut today. Family. My family, your family, our family, the families of everybody in the region, and the fact that at some point we need to stand up, take a stand, to protect our families against the interests that would do us harm in the name of profits and supposed need for energy and all things like that. I'm not an environmental activist at all. I just work in corporate America. This project came into my backyard, into my neighborhood, caused us all in Burrillville to examine what's really going on here. Our eyes were opened to this that's happening, and we're essentially trying to educate all of our friends, neighbors, and neighboring towns. So I wanted to discuss the project for Burrillville known as the Clear River Energy Center. And one thing, before I begin, I think it's important to call out, I don't make any money if the plant is built. I don't make any money if the plant is not built. Again, I'm just a private resident, citizen of Burrillville. And let me tell you first, let me give you some context for why we need your help. Because I think the default reaction from everyone is to say, well, why can't Burrillville just vote this plant down? Why can't your town council just vote this plant down? And so it's important for you guys to understand our laws at Burrillville as it relates to what's called the Energy Facility Siting Act. This was an act, a law that was put in motion in the early 80s, back when the situation was much different. Our country had rolling brownouts. We had an extreme need for additional power plants. And everybody realized, I think people would prefer not to have a power plant near them. But the country needed to have energy. We had a severe lack at that point. And so the federal government strongly encouraged all states to adopt a version of the Energy Facility Siting Act so that they could determine if there is this great need, once the need is developed and confirmed for the power plant, then where is the least impactful place in the state to put this plant? The idea is that they would do studies. They do analysis and research to determine, okay, if we're going to put a power plant in our state, if we have to put a power plant in our state, where is the least impactful place to put it? This is the genesis and the origins of this particular act. In Rhode Island, it's been changed very little since it was instituted, but that's the spirit of it. The Energy Facility Siting Board is made up of three members only. All three of these members ultimately are reports to the governor. They're appointees by the governor. They sit on this board as spelled out by the law. They're not appointed to this board by the governor. Their roles are spelled out as this board. So they are the sole decision maker in this particular process. The town of Burrillville has no formal say. The lawmakers have no formal say. The town council has no formal say, and the citizens of Burrville have no formal say. We are relegated to an advisory opinion by our town, and not even an advisory opinion of the town, an advisory opinion of our zoning and planning boards as to some very specific questions about how it impacts, potentially impacts variances, and is it consistent with our strategic plan. So those are the only things that our town has actually asked for. So we are left to educate everyone and to serve in an advisory capacity and a watchdog capacity for the board as they move through the Energy Facility Siting Board, as they move through this particular process that we have to work within. So we have to ask for help. Here we are asking you guys for help, because the part of the reason that the Energy Facility Siting Board makes up their mind is to consider inputs from a variety of sources, of boards, of bodies, of other states and towns. And the way that they consider that is by you guys adopting a resolution and sending a letter to the Energy Facility Siting Board opposing or supporting the particular plan. So I think it's important to give you that background, because often when we talk to people, people say, well, why don't you just vote the plan down if you don't want it? I can assure you the people of Burrville do not want this plan. I don't know if you've driven through Burrville lately. There are signs pretty much every other yard opposing the plan. If we could vote it down, we certainly would. So I'd like to move into really explaining some additional details of the plant. Now, she did a fantastic job of talking about the kind of cumulative impact of a number of plants here. So for me, and I think in the jobs that you guys do, the health and safety of our citizens, from the strongest of them to the weakest of them, and the protection of the environment, the protection of natural resources, and our strategic sustainable planning and economic development are really issues that affect us all. We are close neighbors in this tri-state area. So really, this is all our backyard. When you hear people talk about not in my backyard, you know, we're really in this together in the tri-state area. In fact, as this map and my map would highlight, the proposed plant is exactly 3 miles from Quaddock State Park and only 2 miles from the state forest. And even where we sit here tonight, which I think technically is about as far away from Burrville as we could be and still be in Thompson, I think is about how that works. And we're still only 10.5 miles away. So very, very close to this particular plant. And therefore, the plant is really an important issue that affects us all. So if I could direct you to Exhibit 1, you'll find a fact sheet that outlines the negative impact of the proposed plant with information that is directly taken from the application itself. You'll notice the following items as you look from top to bottom. You'll notice the amount of hazardous chemicals that will be released from this plant. 52 known pollutants, including 3 tons of hazardous pollutants. They're formally classified as hazardous pollutants by the EPA, by the way. You'll notice the large number of local areas within only a 5-mile radius that are going to be impacted. That includes numerous bodies of water, 26 conservation land areas, 25 state recreation areas, 15 historic districts, 8 conservation areas, and many, many campgrounds and youth campgrounds, as you guys well know. And in fact, some of those areas that I quoted reside in your town. You'll also see the number of impacts, the number of residents impacted in communities directly surrounding the plant, over 100,000 people. And you'll see the hundreds of combined acres that are going to be clear cut to make way for this particular project. When you add in the footprint of the plant itself, when you add in the access way that they have to cut through, 6 miles of 150 foot wide track for power lines, you're looking at over 200 combined acres. And this isn't just, you know, any sort of acre, just this beautiful interior forest that's required for certain species to mate and migrate. This is an important part of our nature. You also see in that forest that there are threatened species and a large number of wetlands that are impacted. Furthermore, you'll see the massive amount that this plant will use on a daily basis. In the summer, the plant will use about 222,000 gallons. In the winter, upwards of almost 1 million gallons of water a day. That's because in the winter, they have to run a diesel fuel when the pipeline capacity is restricted. It needs to be prioritized for home heating, so they have to have a backup winter source, which is diesel fuel. When they run on diesel, they consume significantly more water, and they emit significantly more emissions because of this. In fact, the ISO has already said we have a pipeline capacity problem in our region. We're overbuilt with natural gas, and they're suggesting, you know, we need to stop the natural gas or build more pipelines. Obviously, if you build more pipelines, you see what happens. We get more plants because of that. You'll also see the fact that they plan to use a contaminated water source, a source that's contaminated with MTBE. I don't know how many of you were tuned in to the disaster that happened in Burrville many years ago with the MTBE contamination. I was not a resident at the time. I can tell you, though, from the stories of the people in our town, the stories of my family, that it was absolutely horrible. Sickness, illness, increased cancer rates, people bathing outside like refugees. It was not a pretty time for the state. And so we're very sensitive about opening that well that was sealed by court order and doing anything that would cause that MTBE to potentially affect us and anyone else in the region again. And lastly, you will see clearly that this one plant alone will result in a dramatic increase in our regional CO2 emissions, making it literally impossible to ever meet the goals set forth in the Resilient Rhode Island Act. Now, Resilient Rhode Island Act does not directly impact you. It's our state act. But this is Rhode Island's commitment to together reduce greenhouse emissions, the things that contribute to global warming, which is a well-understood scientific fact at this point. Now, proponents of the fact of the plant will tell you that longer term, this will actually reduce regional emissions due to the ability to displace older plants in the region, but there are zero guarantees of that happening. And, as I mentioned, the ISO, New England ISO, the company that controls the grid, has said themselves that we currently have an over-reliance on natural gas in our region, resulting in pipeline constraints, and which has had a measurable negative impact on regional air emissions already. So while we were tracking down for a while, we're now starting to track back up. So I would point you towards Exhibit 2. Okay, so I live in Thompson, Connecticut. I don't live in Rhode Island. How does this affect me? I think that this does a better job than I could really explain as to how this affects you here in the state. As you can clearly see, Thompson is not all that far from the site of the proposed plant. And in fact, as I mentioned, a number of areas of impact that are cited in the application reside in your town, within your state. And at some point, with the existing power plants already, a major pipeline in the area, multiple compressor stations, adding a second plant, massive plant, to this mix starts to get us to a critical mass. Well, this is no longer a viable ecotourism site. It's no longer a viable recreation site. It becomes an industrialized area. That will hurt our regional economy. That will hurt our lifestyle and our way of life and really change us forever. I think the question is, do we want to be industrialized? Do we want to see these things disappear? And in fact, you know, I think one of the things that's saddest about this situation is that your town gets all of the negative impact and none of the benefits. Frankly, if the plant is built, Rhode Island gets some impact. We get some revenue. Burrville gets some revenue. That's not to be denied. It's been overstated, but it's not to be denied. You guys get nothing out of this. All you get is the negative impacts from that, which is why we think it's very important for you guys to become educated and to support this opposition. And even if you aren't terribly concerned with global warming and the potential impact on our region, it's important to note, as stated earlier, that the air and water pollution know no boundaries. They don't respect state boundaries. As I mentioned earlier, we're only 10.5 miles away from the proposed site. In Exhibit 3, I wanted to touch on one thing and one thing only. You will hear a lot of chatter from the proponents of this plant about jobs, some tax revenue, but mostly, you'll hear about the need and how soon we won't be able to run our iPhones, our air conditioners, or plug in anything anymore. And I urge you not to be swayed by these scare tactics and not to be distracted. You need to be aware that up and down the pipeline, there are plants going in Massachusetts and in Connecticut. In the coming years, this region is going to see a surge in both electricity and, frankly, emissions because of this. ISO themselves has predicted a 0.2% decline in electricity usage in this region due to both efficiency and the positive impact of the renewables coming online. So I urge you to weigh the risks against the rewards, and if we want to focus on need Let us focus on the need for access to clean water. We do have other means of making electricity today. We do not have other means of making clean drinking water. My father's a man I respect. I happen to be a child of the 70s, the late 70s, and my father's really a grown-up hippie, as some of you might be, and he vaguely remembers Woodstock. I'm told that anyone that was at Woodstock doesn't actually remember it directly. But he now works for one of the largest consulting firms in the world. And as we've been pulled into this issue and into this process, I often think about his words to me just a few short years ago, speaking as someone himself, deeply entrenched in the corporate world like I am. He said, "We thought we were going to change the world. Instead, look what we have built. How did it all go so wrong?" And lastly, and in closing, in Exhibit 4, you'll see in 2000, the Burgle Town Council submitted the letter that I've provided you as an example. They sent it in strong opposition to the proposed INDEC power plant at the time. If you're anything like our Burgle Town Council, you are good people who ran for office to make a difference and to provide leadership. And I can tell you from the time that my family has spent in Thompson that that is true and correct. Sometimes in life, I feel like you have the opportunity to take a stand and do the right thing. Now is just one of those times. I urge you to join with organizations, conservation commissions, environmental groups that have come out in opposition to the proposed plan. I urge you to support Burrillville, as Burrillville has supported others in the past, by adopting a resolution against the proposed plan and submitting that resolution to the Energy Facility Siting Board. I am sure that the Thompson Town Conservation Commission will be happy to draft such a resolution focusing on the more salient points. So in closing, I'd like to remind us, really, that New England is a home of innovation. We're the birthplace of the Industrial Revolution. We can do better than this. There are other options. We don't need to double down on fossil fuels and commit us into that for the next several decades. So thank you very much for your time. Thank you for your consideration. And I urge you to work with the town on drafting a resolution in opposition to the plan. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Val? Two great presentations here. Mine's way more off the cuff. I also want to talk about borders. Aquifers don't recognize borders. And I believe the aquifer that's under Burrillville is also under Connecticut. So our state and town should have some input into its use. Aquifers should be for all, forever, not just for a business to use. Will the 52 known pollutants, and especially MBTE, pose a threat to bees, butterflies, and other pollinators? Now, we're in big trouble if we can't pollinate our gardens. As gardeners, you all know. In China, these parts of it are so polluted, they go out with paintbrushes and hand pollinate. Well, guess what? We can put the whole country to work if we're going to destroy it like this, and we still won't be able to afford food because that is so time consuming. I think all the time. You know, if they kill off the pollinators, then I guess I'm done, my business. Clearing 200 acres of trees, which are filters, and the heavy water use they're talking about, wouldn't it make more sense to put in a solar pump? Here's my new mantra. By the way, I've been making my own power for over 35 years. Solar works, believe me. No polluting power plants, go solar. It's time we put a stop to this nonsense. And then I got two other things, really three other things. Once again, the 2 million gallons of oil stored on site, the 40,000 gallons of ammonia, and I'm not sure how much hydrogen is stored on site, makes a wonderful terrorist target. Lit up at night, you fly over, drop the bomb, we're probably all dead, you know. Then we won't have to worry about the pollution. Battery technology is changing rapidly. Tesla is doing incredible work on it, and so are other companies. It's going to make some of these plants obsolete. We're going to have different ways. They're coming out with some really strange technologies for batteries that you're pumping your power during the day, everyone's going to have solar or something, you're going to pump in your power during the day, and you're going to have the power there. We're not going to need these crazy technologies. Someone's trying to get rich on our back. We'll be bailing them out, you watch. And my other question, where is our conservation committee? I haven't seen them in meetings. I haven't heard a word out of them about this. I'm highly disappointed. Maybe it's time to get some new blood on it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Renee.
Renee King, Little Davis Road. I wanted to bring up three more points. In the research I did for this, interestingly enough, Massachusetts is way ahead of us with solar. And you know, if you drive through Massachusetts, you'll see solar farms along the highway in different parts. And they actually have well over 100 solar power producers now scattered through the whole state. The state of Connecticut has 3. The state of Rhode Island has 3. You know, just as Al said, if they're going to put something in, put solar. Because this, the whole thing with fracked gas is that, you know, not only are we bearing the burden of all the air pollution and draining our aquifers, but then we are supporting an industry that is using fracked gas in other states, and we're destroying their water. So I think as, you know, neighbors to each other and neighbors to each other within the United States, out of respect for each other and our environment, we have to really consider what's going on with this fracked gas. So that's the one point I wanted to make. The last two questions I address to you is, in addition to making a Burrowville resolution, will you also be making a resolution opposing the power plant in Killingly, because this is right up there with Burrowville? And then also, my fear is that if we wait until August to make either of these resolutions, it might be too late. I don't know, but I think we need to keep that in the back of our minds. So that's it. Thank you.
Mr. Mann.
Rob Mann, 15 Minute Drive. I'm putting everybody else on camera, so it's not fair, but I don't do it myself. I love the presentation she made. I think from the beginning I made a point of trying to say that all these power plants are going to overlap. I had no idea there were so many, so it's certainly been increased from what I thought it was. The other thing is, with power plants like these, is what happens when the 20 or 30 years from now they have to close them? Are they brownfield sites? Are they polluted pieces of land that they have to clean up, or are they just sit there barren? Like we have 2 brownfield sites in Thompson, the mills, that we've gotten, you know, $200,000 grants for them to clean them up. Is that what these become? These lands get destroyed? I'll be honest with you, I've never really been a huge supporter of solar. I know it works. I know Al's been very successful with it, many people do. I'm a pretty conservative, so my issue with solar has always been, you know, obviously it's subsidized and funded by the government. I'm not going to deny it. You know, no, I understand that. The one thing I can say about solar is, yeah, they might take up 100 acres or 200 acres to put a solar farm in, but if the solar panels don't work, they replace one. Or if the lease runs out, they remove them. The land isn't destroyed. You can go right back to farming it 20 or 30 years later. I think people really need to consider that side of solar. And that's why I'm terribly opposed to this plan from the MTBE, obviously. From day one, I've said that. I think it's just it's opening up a genie in a bottle for people to be poisoned. They do have to run the water line. I don't know how many miles down the road. I mean, all those residents live along the road in Burrowville. If there's a water main break, people that have private wells, what happens to their land? I mean, it just disgusts me. It just really does. Thank you for letting me speak and your time.
Mr. Pimentel.
Tom Pimentel, 40 Star Road. I would just urge the board, like Renee said, to try to push for this resolution to get a little quicker, and for the Killenly plan as well as Burrville. I'm a big advocate of helping Burrville. I attend all their meetings. I missed one last week because I had other obligations, but I will be at the next one. I'm hoping that this board can do something. I wish that this would have happened when Paul came. This was a great presentation tonight, and I think the people that came last time weren't aware that this was happening tonight. Was this advertised that he was coming tonight? No, right? No, see that? So hopefully he can come back if we have that, that other meeting you're talking about. That would be great. Thank you.
Wayne.
Ryan, why don't we take it, bro? I've got a question. After looking at that, if we're not careful, our tax, that value in the houses are going to go. And I mean, no offense, they're down already. They're not going to come back up. They'll even get worse. Then what are you guys going to do? I mean, no offense, we might as well just close town and move somewhere else that the rate is going. The electric company will take the property. And it looks like, I mean, that's that. Look at that. You think you moved into a, you know, clean area. And you're looking at it, you said, wow.
Thank you. Anybody else?
I have one more thing here. I think it's pretty unfair that Rhode Island gets to do this and not have to contact the surrounding towns, even be able to make us aware of what's going on until it's too late. Because from my understanding, there's only one person left because the other two recuse themselves. Is that true? I heard this that comes down to one guy. One guy is going to vote for this in Rhode Island. So I want to know how the truth of that is, if we can find that out. Because the other two overlap on different boards. That's something I would ask if you could find that out. That would be great.
All right, is that the end?
That's it.
So that is slightly correct. So there is the Energy Facility Study Board itself is made up of three members. One of the groups that owes them one of those advisory opinions is the PUC, the Public Utility Commission. That commission is normally made up of three members. Two of those members had to recuse themselves, one because she's on the FSB, the other one because she's already been an outspoken proponent of natural gas in the past, so she recused herself. That leaves one remaining committee member on the PUC that will turn in an advisory opinion about if we need the plant and if it's cost justified. So we're very close, but there's a slight nuance there.
So can we give right letters to this gentleman of our opinion?
You can, the public is free to write to any of the officials in any of the towns, the siting commission, whatever, as, you know, as a citizen. The text, so please do so. Al.
Can you make the handouts you received available to the public in the future?
You're welcome. Okay. Is that it? Thank you very much for speaking, Renee. Great presentation. Okay, moving. The board doesn't have anything else?
No, nothing for me.
Okay, moving on to vacancies on boards, commissions, and committees. You have the list of the where we do have vacancies. The currently the Charter Communications Northeast Advisory Council, Dick Trudeau is on there because we did appoint him previously. And we have two other vacancies. This committee meets once or twice a year, not very often. And it kind of gets input from Charter as to what is going on with their situation.
How much they're going to raise rates?
Yeah, I guess you could say that as well. So I've attended the last one with Dick, being on all committees and so forth. We have, you know, two people we can put there. Economic Development Commission is two alternates. Agent of the Elderly is an appointment by the CEO. And it used to be previously held by the Selectman's Office, and that was Betty that was in there, the last one. And since she's been gone, it's been vacant. I have spoken to a couple of people. One was Suzanne Lukowski, because she works with the Housing Authority, with Gladys Greens and so forth, and she had expressed some interest in helping out, as well as T. And that was prior to Donna Grant going, and Andor said that they would go with the recommendation for this. That is another one that needs just to be appointed to take care of these questions and so forth, and filling out forms.
So we're basically looking for a volunteer then at this
stage. Yeah, and right now we have Teague that is willing to do it as long as well as Suzanne, and I'm inclined to just go along with that. I believe that's another one that I can, as the CEO, just name for the statement and give them a direction to go. Northeast Regional Planning Commission has one vacancy. I'll be honest, I currently really don't know exactly what they do. There's two people on it. One is John Rice, and they have not met in the last couple of years or so.
Okay.
So it's something to look at. Small Cities Advisory Board Redevelopment Agency has one vacancy. As you know, the Fire Protection Advisory Committee currently has been enacted for the past year. It needs a chair and two citizen. There's still two vacancies for non-fire-related personnel, regular John Q. citizen to be members, and we had it filled by one. We have not had it filled in quite some time. And the Inlands Wetlands, there is two expected vacancies. They will be coming up in the future, very near future. We should be looking very hard at finding replacements for people that are willing to serve. So this is all up on the website. It has been, but that is the list to read. They go through it. Since we added it to the agenda, we had the conversation, the agenda items. So this is where we're not too bad, considering the vacancies that we did have in the past, that we have started filling positions. So,
do we have any applicants or volunteers for any of these positions at this stage? I know about the EDC, but the other ones?
None as the others.
Okay, thank you.
We do not have any. So the only one that we do have is the, we don't have a chair. We do have a volunteer that is willing to complete the report by the Fire Advisory Committee that has been started. And over the past 4 or 5 years, as we discussed at the last meeting, he feels that the information is there. The report just needs to be compiled. He was agreeable to take it on under the conditions of just let him go complete the report with the information, and the facts will stand as they speak, and may lead us into other direction, but I have no idea.
I did get a chance to talk to Mr. Rivera. We had a little telephone tech, but finally did connect with him. I think it'd be a good idea to give him see what he can do. That'd be a good idea. I don't know if she had a chance, but.
No, I haven't had a chance to speak with him on this issue, just on some other issues with the town, but
I'd be in favor of letting him, fill up, do a report and see if he can gather from the information that's already been generated, as well as he was going to, contact other members of that been on the advisory commission and pull together a report. That would be great.
Yeah, then we'll go with that, and the town will have an idea, and we'll know where to proceed with and what the outlook will be on those recommendations that the fire department has been working so diligently in, as up until the last past year. There's been a lot of information that's come out of that, and we just need to get it down. So I would entertain a motion to have Brian Murphy take on this task and complete the report.
I shall move.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
So based on John and Steve, when you see, and I will get a letter out to the other departments that Mr. Murphy will be in contact with you, you know, asking probably questions on some of the information, because I've given him everything. And, you know, just work with them, and we'll bring this to a close and see where it goes from there as to what the needs of the town are for today and in the future. So it'll be great to get this going again. And I would recommend that, since you do have a, and it's totally up to you, we've had a fire prevention, Thompson Firemen's Association in the past, that maybe, you know, you could resurrect that, because, you know, you've got some viable people there, and see if you can make that work again, you know, in conjunction with pushing up the report, because it's great to have that interaction with the departments. So that would be good. Okay, on number five, anything else?
Not for me.
The town website contract. The current webmaster contract, which is $1,200, which is $100 a month for major maintenance and upgrading to the site and the occasional question, et cetera, that we may pose to him, is up. It is a contract for $1,200. As of tomorrow at 10 a.m., we do have a two-hour meeting with him over some of the fine points of being able to manage the site a little bit more fully. He's coming in, and we'll be working with Marie, because she has been putting everything up. And from what she learned, then she can, you know, talk with Tina or whoever, you know, whoever may need some guidance, you know, with their access on that. So that's currently, you know, where we are on that. We'll see how tomorrow goes and so forth, and how that all progresses. If you recall, the town did, with the last, they were under contract, the webmaster to upgrade the site, which he did. So we're probably 6-7 months or whatever since October in the new format. And it's, we made progress. There's more progress to be made. And that's with the cooperation with him, with the limited contract that he has, which is the $100 a month, which equals a couple hours. Of, so what I would hope is that, you know, for the next budget season, which is coming up in 8 months, that we may want to look at where we are with this particular homepage that we're dealing with, see if there's other options out there, and where we possibly can go with this.
What about starting now?
Yeah, so I'm saying we got to, you know, some to put a proposal together for the next budget season.
But there's no, there's no contract starting, right? Or the contract.
The contract
ended June 30th, didn't it?
The contract ended June 30th.
Right. So right now there's no...
There's nothing in place. Nothing in place. He is coming in.
I understand that.
Yeah. Too. And...
but what do we have starting 2 days ago or three?
We still have him. We have not received the bill, you know, the new bill from him.
He's wrapping up his contract, right?
He's wrapped it up and he's...
So do we need to generate either a new contract or do on an as-needed basis a... some support for our website going forward?
I can do it. I can talk with him when he comes in tomorrow.
Okay.
You know, we can discuss doing it by the month, doing it by quarterly, 6 months.
Or someone else, maybe?
Or even possibly somebody else.
Okay.
I would hope that I'll have a better idea of where everything is going after tomorrow.
Okay.
You know, with the training session that starts at 10 a.m.
Okay.
You know, with this is... and get a better feel of where we are with him and report back at the next meeting.
I think the important thing is going to be make sure that we have whatever passwords and access codes needed so that if we change person responsible,
that we're not
held hostage.
Exactly. Correct.
That's critical. That's critical, whether this person stays on board or goes to someone else. We should never feel that we're hostage to any company or individual. That's got to be, you know, it's number one. We can't be hostage to anybody. And then I think we need to consider, I think there's been some dissatisfaction with what we have so far. Is that fair to say?
Well, we haven't renewed the contract.
That's... So we might want to consider other choices, so...
We have to see the options, and like I said, he's going to be in for a couple of hours and get a better feel of where the training, what he's giving us, and I have a better handle on it come tomorrow.
Let's not renew this general...
Not renewing anything at this point.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay, and like I said, I'll report back. What I would recommend between now and the next meeting is have a conversation with Marie after the training session.
All right.
You know, just to see what her take is.
Well, we have a special meeting coming up Thursday. Maybe you could give us an update.
The problem that I see, though, is aside from her being able to put things up, she can't provide software updates or anything that might need to be done.
No, she
can't. That we're unaware of that this program might require in order for us to continue whatever we're doing. I don't know the background noise that happens with this particular program. So that's the only one of the hesitations that I have in terms of, like, the training is great and we'll have access and passwords, but we're going to be able to only have a very general understanding of what we're doing, and everything else is going to be kind of flying by the seat of our pants up until we decide to put it in for the next budget, which I think will be too late by then. And I understand we already are at $1,200. At the same time, we don't want to be doing a disservice to the residents. That's just kind of how I feel.
Leading to what sort of conclusion, Shane? I'm not sure I understand.
I think rather than waiting, you know, regardless of how the training goes, I think we should still have a plan in place to either, you know...
To find a source for a new webmaster.
To find somebody. Yeah, to find somebody.
Or a webmaster, let's put it that way.
We can prepare a proposal and go out.
I mean, I just think it would be beneficial for us to look at what our options are. I wasn't sure what we were going to be discussing tonight under the contract, other than I obviously knew that we were coming to an end with that one. And I didn't know if we had discussed with Mr. Stratus whether or not we wanted to have him on a as-needed basis or not, or just, for lack of better terms, cut our losses and just see where we can go from here on out. And, you know, I guess because we made the updates, we'll definitely want to use what we have for now, just so we don't... So we don't spend more money.
Well, get the best use of the money that we've spent to date.
Fair enough. Maybe we should consider what other choices we have. I think there's some other choices out there that
might
better serve us.
Right. What might be the cost for an as-needed individual who's familiar with this program?
And I believe there are some services out there that actually specialize in providing municipalities with websites and so forth. I'm not an expert on that at all, but I think I've heard of that. So maybe there's some options out there that...
There are some options out there. I was looking at a few things, and one of them was a Putnam, Killingly, and Confort use virtual town hall.
Virtual town hall, okay.
Okay, they're out of Boxborough.
Okay.
And it's geared up to municipalities.
Okay.
Okay, that is one option.
Okay.
Construction of the site is just under $7,000.
Right.
And a $2,700 maintenance fee.
Okay.
For a year.
Okay.
Okay, I mean, that is one option.
Okay.
You know,
there are, as well.
There is things out there.
Okay.
It's just coming up with the right solution for what we're looking for that makes the most
sense. Sure, fair enough.
You know, and... This is where, if we make a wholesale change and say get away from the format that we're in, go with something like what I just said,
you know,
virtual town hall,
yeah,
or something similar to that, based on the cost, we definitely don't have it currently in the budget. It's something that we definitely have to do our research, get it ready for the next budget, go around and say, based on what we have, this is the direction the town needs to go in.
And I'm not trying to knock Marie's capabilities or anyone else in that office either. I think it's a smart choice that whoever we hire from here on out at the office has all of those, you know, admin or at least, you know, some access in some capacity. Should have been done.
we've been working towards it. As slowly and as painful as it has been, we have been working towards it because we have been getting more things up, more things have been getting straightened out as she has been given the direction in order how to make the changes on it. And again, trying to make the most of what we have invested in the site to.
Right.
Yeah. Admittedly, for $100 a month, you're not going to get a lot at the end of the day.
No, it is limited based on the amount of support that you're going to get.
Right.
So, but that's where we're at.
Well, I guess it'd be nice to know what options we might have and you know what we can do. So,
I mean,
I just think there's been a lot of dissatisfaction with what we've got so far. So let's see if we can do something different. And I'm a little concerned if we have to wait a year before we do something else. That would be disappointing. Is that fair?
Yeah, or like I said, you know, continue with what we have, but hire, you know, some type of consultant or, you know, someone who we can hire as needed to maintain what we already have and then cross that bridge when budget season comes to see if that's what we want to continue having.
Yeah.
Right. Or get a new program. But you said she's getting a few hours training on tomorrow, so we can
tomorrow
meet
at 10 a.m.
Thursday.
Tomorrow at 10 a.m., she's got 2 hours with Mr. Stratus going over a list of a couple of pages of things that she needs to be able to do. And with the guidance to make the changes, you know, that we should be doing maintaining our own site.
Sure.
You know, any, what do you call it? Webmaster, I, you know, should be based on doing the program maintenance, I would say.
Yeah, but this, you know, we're able to use our maintained stuff, so we should be able to do some of our own. I think we're having difficulty doing that.
Okay. We good on that?
I think so.
Okay. Fire departments. Steve asked, you know, that we have this on. I do have one thing in there that I will comment on first. I did get the official notice from EMS, Jonathan Littlepop, that the EMS plan that we have with the town, as which was revised a few years ago through the advisory committee, with the new law that's been passed, effective November 1st, Narcan is now required, and we have to add that to that agreement between the EMS providers and the town, and that they are all trained and carrying the medication for that. So it's a document that we're going to have to get inserted into the agreement and signed off. I'm going to leave that to the, I'll be in contact with the chiefs, but the, I'm still not sure if that has to be a adjunct like we've done in the past. It's a good question. I don't know the answer. We used to do adjuncts for certain skill levels, you know, and I don't know, but since this was a law change that may supersede it, that medical patrol doesn't have a choice. It has to be done, and, you know, prescription given, whatever it is, and where we go, the departments go out and get it. So,
for you, may I ask Mr. Sharp a question? Does the state have the option in terms of the way the means that we administer Narcan, whether it be
the way the way that we're required to administer now is intranasally, the only way that we as BLS providers are able to do that.
Okay.
And that's through the
Correct. Okay, thank
yes.
you.
We can't do it intranasally.
Okay.
That's an ALS skill.
Okay. It's all pretty measured. There are 2 milliliters vials that are done 1 milliliter per nostril.
Does the state provide reimbursement for how it's stored?
The state mandates that we do it if they don't want to use other lot. At a cost. We currently, for security ambulance, have a prescription that's out there. We will be purchasing very shortly to put on the ambulance.
You haven't had it up till now?
No.
Okay.
It hasn't been mandated.
Okay.
The departments have, from past training, have done the preparation to get to this.
Most all members are currently trained to administer the Narcan program.
But they haven't actually had it though?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'm speaking for community fire.
All right, fair enough. Okay, thank you.
I believe East Thompson is the only department that does currently have it.
Oh, I did not know that.
From what I'm hearing, I can't use the one.
Okay, thank you.
Just if I may bring to light for residents, since January 1st of this year, going back into the record of ambulance calls that we've had, there have been 7 recorded opioid overdoses in the downtown center. That's a huge number.
So more than one a month then?
Since January 1st of this year.
Thank you.
And they do expect the epidemic to continue increasing.
Just also from what I've been hearing, that heroin is half the cost of marijuana nowadays, so it's much cheaper to purchase as a user than it is for marijuana.
Wow.
Can I ask if we've had 7 cases since January, do you know how that compares with Killingly and Plainfield and surrounding towns?
Not much. Webster is probably 3 times, 4 times as well. I don't know.
Southbridge?
Same thing. I think you've I don't want to stereotype it. If you look at the demographics of the towns that kind of dictates how the potential drug use can be. Out of those 7, 4 were not towns.
One of the issues is we don't know how rampant the epidemic is with the heroin usage. It doesn't mean that we don't have overdoses here, but they could be occurring outside of the town. In neighboring towns as well, so I would have to think that
we're not immune
and it's widespread. It's just that we've been very fortunate compared to Webster, for instance, as one of the I know one of the paramedics that works in Webster, and they have it's very high there for the calls that they have on, you know, the opioid situation.
If I could one more again.
Go ahead.
As the chief of the department, the reason I held off till now, obviously we have to purchase it. One was a cost factor that to put it on 3 ambulances and then to have backups so that once it's used we can restock again. But the protocol has always been and still will remain, if there is a call to 911 as an overdose, the state police will automatically get dispatched. The paramedic, the intercept paramedic, the QB, will also be dispatched. They both carry Narcan at this point in time. So it's not like we don't have a source for it. And again, the indications or the criteria to use it is for non-breathing. Because what happens is it suppresses the will, heroin suppresses the will to breathe for your organs to function and so forth. It just takes you down to a very low point where your body can't function any longer. The Narcan will bind with the cells and reverse that to allow the patient to spontaneously breathe. So there, it's not, we can't administer to somebody that's walking, talking, maybe not coherent, but there is a criteria we can use.
Renee King Thompson. And who's paying for the Narcan that we're obligated to now use?
Fire department.
Fire department.
Paying for it.
So the town has.
Fire department.
Fire departments.
Yes and no, right?
Okay, hang on.
On a yearly basis, but that comes out of that.
We, the town, well, with the current budget, that it was at 43.5, I believe. Is that 45 now?
47.
47. Out of that 47, they have, all of the departments have to pay for their own supplies out of that and the money that they do raise by various fundraisers. Okay. Do you have anything else that, on the fire department?
Yeah, actually, at the last selectmen's meeting, it was, the issue was raised by a member of the audience about the hiring, a question about the hiring practices at our various fire departments. The concern was that perhaps there may be members of some of your departments who are not qualified to either drive or participate in some of your activities. And I wanted to ask, and I'm not here to embarrass anyone or embarrass any of your members or how you operate, but an honest question, truly an honest question, how you screen your members, how do you ensure that they're properly vetted to do their job? I don't know if you're aware of the question, you know, the question that came up from the audience or not, but please take my question as just an honest question about how we ensure that. I mean, one of the comments was some members were alleged to have DUIs in their record. You know, are they driving your trucks? That's sort of the kind of question.
Again, I'm speaking for community.
Fair, I understand.
If anybody wants to apply for the fire department or even the ambulance side, etc., we take applications, require 3 letters of recommendation. We do call the reference letters. We do not do a police background check.
You do not do a criminal background check?
Because of the cost incurred. I don't know, at last I knew it was upwards of $70 or $80 per bathroom check. And again, that will only give you minor violations from what I'm being told. From there, as far as training, we give in-house training for fire apparatus.
No, I understand that. Yeah.
We encourage all the members to go through state certification training.
Sure, I appreciate that.
But again, there's some serious costs that are incurred.
Sure.
I know that for a community, if a member will take a firefighter one program through the state to get certified to enter into a hazardous environment, once they get that certification, then they're reimbursed half.
How do you ensure that they have a driver's license?
We always make sure we have copies of a valid driver's license if they're going to do a driver's.
Obviously, not necessarily all drivers, but yeah, but
correct. We critique very strong who we allow. We're talking 60, 70, or 40 to 60,000 pound emergency apparatus, but not everybody's going to drive.
Oh, no, of course, of course, and you know, some of them are fire police. How do you ensure that they're qualify for that from?
The fire police have to be appointed by the town.
Yeah, I understand that, and we're relying on you for your recommendations, and I'm concerned.
You have to go through a certified program for fire police.
Yeah. So we're relying on you, and you're relying on a reference letter that comes from their friend.
Well, we don't allow it to come from friends. I mean, it has to come from workers.
Yeah.
It's not like, I'll use an 18-year-old example. We're not taking it from your friend as an 18-year-old.
I appreciate that, but they're not gonna recommend. They're not gonna say, "Somebody, I just did something to it." You know, well, you understand? They're gonna.
Most businesses, if you're asking for a letter of recommendation, you've done something bad, you're not gonna ask for a letter from that person.
Of course not. But businesses are very careful about giving a reference because it's very dangerous to give a bad one.
Okay.
You know, they're liable for what they might say. They could be taking to court, sue, et cetera, et cetera. So they're, sometimes they can only give a very generic one, if one at all. Sometimes it can only be, he was employed, or he or she was employed here, X date to X date, and that's kind of all they can say. So that's my concern. Many of the allegations in the comments were just, in my mind, inappropriate, but there are some comments in those comments where, again, do we have someone who's, again, take a silly example of someone who shouldn't be driving, driving. And again, that's a maybe straightforward example. And that's one I want to kind of address.
I know as the chief of the department, I know of somebody that shouldn't be driving, or shouldn't be doing something, they will get pulled from service, like several, until they can prove they're either capable of doing the job or driving or whatever the case may be.
One of the allegations was that members of the and again, allegation only, I know, don't know whether it's true or not. Some members had committed larceny. Some members were had outstanding warrants. Would those members be allowed to participate in your activities, would be allowed to enter buildings? And how would you become aware of those if that was the case? I mean, because I don't, they might not volunteer that information.
And then understandable. Outside of hearing it or seeing it in papers,
yeah,
or some sort of publication or whatever the case may be, you don't know that. Is there an ongoing investigation each of members on a year-to-year basis? No. If I see it in papers or if I see it in the radio or news or whatever the case may be, then I will act upon it.
When they apply for membership, are they required to submit a statement regarding their history under the rules of perjury?
They know that there is a background check that's being performed on them, and that background check is showing to their references.
And are they required to state any criminal background in their applications?
Yes, it does.
As subject to the laws of perjury?
Right.
Same for all their departments?
Right on the application.
For all, yeah. All right. And again, my concern, and again, we just had allegations, and I don't want to make. I want to be fair as possible. I just want to make sure that, you know, we are insuring some of the equipment and so forth.
Right.
And just for the citizens of our town, we have to look out for them. And I just want to be careful about what we're doing here.
Again, as Steve stated, we can't speak for the other three.
I appreciate that.
We are independently owned and operated.
I understand. Okay. But you don't do a criminal background check?
No. If there was more money in the budget.
No.
I'm just being
yes, please.
With public information that was in the courtrooms, it happens to be one of our members. We have that influence potentially.
So?
The department, the legal system, take care of itself, and you know, we also don't discriminate. You know, people make mistakes.
Sure, I appreciate that too. Yeah.
It also goes into okay, if the license is being stated.
Yep.
We go through a retraining.
Yep, that's fair.
It's public information that it happens.
Yep. No, I understand. Right. I agree with you. Know, if you on your served your time, so to speak, you'd be reinstated. That would be fair, of course.
I guess if it's stated.
Yeah, I would understand that. Yeah. All right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Bill, I think it's definitely a conversation worth having further at some point and figuring out how we can maybe all work together and look at how other fire departments are doing it. I don't want to tell them how to do
right,
their job.
Right, yeah, it's not our job to tell them.
I agree that public safety is something that the Board of Selectmen and all fire departments have in common. So.
Yeah.
Hey.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, economic development. I believe that we may have put this on, even though I had put on vacancies on boards, commissions, and committees. What I will do very quickly is touch on the EDC and that they are still moving forward with the, I can't remember the proper wording, the
branding study?
The study by NECOG. Okay. And if anybody had I believe Steve was there, I was there, and names were offered up that, of people that may be of an asset from various walks of life that could help with the pros and the cons of our community, you know, where our strong points and weak points are. So I know Tina did send that around, requesting any contact information, or if somebody comes up with an additional name of somebody, that, you know, please give it to her, so the EDC can continue working with them. So that would be touching on the EDC. Other than the two, which we did talk about, the two alternates that vacancies that we have, we do have, currently have a list of four people that have expressed whenever the board wishes to act on that or add to it tonight, the next meeting, that's fine. That's up to.
I'll stop by and take a look at their application. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just want to say if we can take a look at their application that they filled out to see which one.
Sure.
That's and if not, then to require perfect. Them to do it.
Very good. Okay, which moves us on to vacant positions and hirings. As you are aware, the as I mentioned earlier, the highway, when we went over the minutes, the highway department closed today for the maintainer.
Okay.
We have 15 applications for employment. They will be ready for the board to review for Thursday. Pick up your copies.
Okay.
I will have those all made up tomorrow. We're going to be needing for the interest on the loan on Thursday morning, sometime between 10:30 and 11. So you can pick up that and go over it. My unless you want to add somebody else to the committee for the hiring. I mean, we're looking at the Board of Finance and obviously the Highway Director. For input on the applications.
I'm sorry, the Board of
Selectmen.
Oh, I thought you said Board of Finance.
Sorry about that. The Board of Selectmen and definitely the Highway Director, because he is going to be working with them. So is there possibly anybody else you would like to consider to help us interview, or are you comfortable with that makeup of four?
That sounds fine to me.
Sharon?
I'm good with that.
Okay. I'll give you the applications and so forth for Thursday. We'll review them, narrow down to what we want to interview, and then we will go there for a date that's good for all of us. We do have the secretary clerk that became vacant again. With regrets, she was offered a full-time position with benefits, that stuff that we could not offer. So that is in the shopper's guide this week, out for advertising again, which will close on the 15th. And if we can think about if we're going to consist of the same committee as we did, food for thought. And obviously, after it's closed, applications and so forth will be made available again so we can review those.
I'll just say I was pleased with the makeup of the last hiring committee.
Yep.
We can't do that.
So, very good. I'm good with that as well. So those will be ready for Thursday. Which brings us to, unless you have any other comments, good. All right, other business. Do either of you have other business?
It's not other business. It's just, in hearing the potential for us as a town not having ample time in order to pass a resolution with regard to the Barroville power plant, I think that it's feasible that that this board can finalize what was presented to us within the coming days and have our attorney take a look at it and urge him to provide us feedback perhaps by the end of next week, and that we can get a town meeting prior to the start of August. I don't know how do you feel about that? I know we have some other things going on, but we also don't want to miss our opportunity to present it to the townspeople before it. Or at what we could also do is just run alongside that, and, you know, in addition to having a town meeting, we as a board can just submit a formal letter aside from the resolution, just to ensure that there's at least some paper trail of what our intent is or how we feel about the proposed project.
Well, the board can submit a letter as far as how the board feels about a problem. And there's nothing wrong in that, and the townspeople still can, you know, do the resolution and, you know, pass the resolution as well. So I have no problem doing both. That obviously more can be more beneficial with the information that we've gotten from the various presentations. There is quite a concern, especially just with the aquifer, you know, and our recreation and aquatic and everything else along that line. Very, very major impact, never mind the air quality. I do have my concerns with that as well. Never mind what will be taken downstream if additional power plants go on, which just continues to dilute our drinking water and aquifer as well.
And another option, which we haven't discussed yet, is the potential for just having a public hearing to allow the residents the opportunity to tell us how they feel about it. And then, again, so that we were not pressed for time, instead of having to ensure that we have a town meeting in time, we could, based off of what we gather from that public hearing, adopt the resolution ourselves.
Well, let's go back to your original question, though. Can we do a town meeting faster? And why not? Instead of waiting for beginning of August, can we do it in a couple of weeks?
I have to check on the...
I mean, did the language as it stands that you presented, was that reviewed by another attorney in Rhode Island?
All I can say is what Mr. Rosselli gave us, that these were two resolutions. One was actually sent by, I think...
One was from Town of Charlton, if I recall. And
this one's from Burrville.
And
there
was
one from Charleston. Yeah. So there was a couple in there. And then there was the this one here.
More general.
Yeah. So it would be just plugging in and making sure. You know, I don't know if anybody has... if anybody else in the state has done anything with the, from Connecticut into sending one into Burrville, you know, into Rhode Island. I don't know I can't remember, what was your first name?
Jason.
If Jason or Renee are aware of anybody, any other town, because I have not heard of anything as of yet. I would have to think there will be something coming, you know, to act on in Connecticut anyway, in the near future. As a resolution, you know, for the proposed one in Killingly. But I'm not aware of if Putnam, Killingly, Woodstock, or somebody else has.
Regardless of whether they did or didn't.
Well, I'd be curious about how the resolution looked. That's okay. What I'm driving at.
I'm not aware. I can ask when I meet with the people in Killingly on Thursday.
Quickly, Rob.
Yep, no, all I was going to say is, you know, these kind of things sometimes take somebody to pave the way. Maybe the town of Thompson's that person this time around. That's it.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, to answer your question, there are a number that are being reviewed. They just haven't made it out yet.
All right, I've got a meeting with town council in the morning on the
I'm not sure how much...
Anyway,
this has to be, to be honest with you.
No, like I said, I do have a quick meeting with the with there, and I'll get the I'll have a chance to have a chat with them on this.
Okay.
and we'll expedite.
So is our sense that we'd like to move along a little quicker than August, beginning of August?
Trying to. I'll find out what the timeframes are in order to.
Okay.
For this.
Thank you.
As well.
Since you addressed me, Jason, may I recommend that your one suggestion of parallel tracks might be a good one as well?
Letter from the board.
A letter from the board. Issue that quickly.
I would be willing to draft it on behalf of the board, but then pass it, send it in an email for reading.
Thank you.
Okay. And you did get a copy of the one that Jason did send that goes back to the year 2000. Right?
In your letter from you individually, you could also say something about a vote of the members present or something like that, or unanimous vote or whatever it might be.
Good idea.
Anything else?
What are we under?
Citizens' comments.
Citizens' comments?
Well, we are under other business, if we're done with other business.
Well, if we're still under business, just for a couple of agenda items for next time, make sure we, would like to make sure we get a road plan or some sort of thing. I don't want it to slip away, if we could. At our next regular meeting, I don't think we'll be ready at this special meeting, but
no.
Thank you.
Anything else?
No.
All right. That it on agenda items?
Let me just take a look. Yes, at least at this moment. Yep, thank you.
Yeah, feel free to, let us know.
Sure.
Let Marie know, and we'll put it on. All right, back to citizens' comments. And do we have any? Mr. Clemente.
Mental police style. Where do I get the application? I'd like to go on the weapon for
it. Don't remember if it's online, but you can stop by and see Marie in the office, and she will give you a questionnaire.
I just wanted to let the board know, seeing I have 2 years of studying the wetlands, I think it would make a great candidate to be on that board. Thank you.
Anybody else? Hey, good news tonight. No tax refunds. But the tax bills are going out today.
That's the good news?
It's not good news. It is for Rainey. Rainey's happy. Rainey's thrilled to death.
I'm sure he is.
He went all the way to Waterbury this morning and picked them up for 8 o'clock this morning. And they've been stuffing them all day. 15,000 of them.
I can believe it.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
So, with that, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.